related to related to our priority for the 23-24 school year. And this is how we've really been how we have organized ourselves over this year and have been sharing about our work and our updates. So you can see, or just a refresher, in our first area was around our having an anti-racist learning environment where all of our students can thrive. Our second area was around excellent teaching and instructional coaching. And our third area was around our data-driven instruction in service of student learning. And so I'm really excited that today we're going to, we can click that. We're going to have a focus on our data processes. So this is something, let's see, there we go. You know, at KIPP SoCal, we really pride ourselves on how we can use data to guide our work, our decision making, and the learning of our students. So I'm gonna introduce our two speakers. So we have our Director of Data and Analytics, Bertha Hernandez, who will be joining us. Thank you. Bertha's been with us for over 10 years now, so a true expert in her work. And then we also have Caitlin Johnson, who is our assessment manager. Caitlin was previously the school leader for KIPP Pueblo Upper, and so we're really excited for her to have transitioned into this role and really help drive our data work and processes. So Bertha, I'll turn it over to you. Do you want to, hopefully this will work.
Okay. All right. Hi, everyone. Nice to see you all and be in this space with you all today. So, as Belen mentioned, we will talk about Big Rock number three, as we're calling it. And so, just to orient you all on our data team's mission and vision. And so, the data team really empowers KIPP SoCal team members to use data, utilize accurate data to make decisions and drive action in the best interest of each student. So, really grounding us in this as we reach and aim Big Rock number three was really important for us. And so why, right? Why was this a big rock for us this last year and will be a big rock for us moving forward, even though it might not necessarily be an org and regional goal? It's something that our team still really is passionate about and is really important to how as an organization we're functioning. And so why was this important? So as the 2021-2022 school year ended, this was the position of our team. We had lost our director, our analytics manager, our associate director, student information manager, and student info associate, and we did have our only analyst on maternity leave. And so this meant that our team was very, very understaffed as we were leading into a new school year. What does that look for us now and how?
Yeah.
Right? And so this was key in reestablishing systems and structures for us. We needed to restaff our team. And so one thing that is not labeled for you all on here is a lot of our team members actually came from schools, right? So Melissa was a former expanded learning instructor at a school. Hilda was a former registrar. Ulises is actually one of our newer team members that just came out of graduated from Irvine. Angelica came from Endeavor and was a former Endeavor team member as we merged with them. Stephanie was a registrar. Maria was also a registrar. Anna and Juan were also a registrar. So we have a lot of school experience with the data that we are touching and managing. All right, and so data everywhere, right? So we know we have all different types of data. This is just a graphic for you all to kind of give you a map of how we're collecting, and all the little arrows show you where the information is going. And so a big part of reestablishing and re-enabling these structures was not just collecting the information and rebuilding our warehouse, but also making sure that we're documenting policies. We had so much team member turnover that a lot of the policies and systems we had in place lived in people's brains and not necessarily on paper. And so that meant re-documenting policy and procedures, coming up with the cadence for our audits to ensure that we had clean data and not what we call, quote unquote, dirty data. And then the last thing that we did was we re-evaluated and explored our dashboards. And so what I'll hand out is just a little packet of the growth our dashboards have made. So you get to see a comparison of what our dashboards look like now. So the first one is our student survey, what it looks like now, and the second page is what it looked like before. Yeah. And so our goal was not just to collect the information, but also increase data literacy, right? And so we're doing that by simplifying our dashboards, and you can see that from page one to page two. Page two is our outdated student survey dashboard, whereas page one is our current student survey dashboard. And so the ability to PDF something and have it look very easy to understand gives us not the ability not just for our internal stakeholders to understand this data, which is you all and our school leaders and our teachers and instructional assistants and ops, but also the ability to be able to send this to parents, right? And our parents can clearly understand and see this survey data. So how is data and it's important to student instruction? And so a big piece of that is having clean data is really critical in driving our instruction. We must know what students know, where they are in relation to standards, and what gaps we are seeing. Without clean data, we can't develop these plans. We can't drive instructional achievement. So a big piece of this, and why Caitlin is here with me today, is collaboration has to continue in order for us to continue growing our data literacy. So we had to really reestablish collaboration with teams such as the teaching and learning team, the expanded learning ops, school leaders and assistant school leaders, deans and teachers, because these folks are the ones that are forming the types of data that they want to see, what's important, what questions are coming up on the ground, what questions can we help answer with the data that we have. And so the biggest question that we continue and will continue to ask is in terms of growing our data literacy is, do you understand the story your student data is telling you or your school, or most importantly, our authorizers? So I'm going to hand it over to Caitlin to show you an example of how we've been growing our data literacy.
Thank you. Okay, so hi everybody, I'm Caitlin. I'm going to run this like I'm going to run it tomorrow at Lit Week for all of our leaders and our people. So you need a piece of paper. There are no slides. We're doing paper pencil. You need something to write with. So if you don't have something to write with, I got you. It's ready.
And Lit Week is Leaders in Training, which is our happening right now this week as our school leaders, assistant school leaders, deans, and other leadership team members are all together preparing for the upcoming year.
So, like Bertha said, now that we have like really great clean system or like visualizations of our data, now what we're transitioning to is making sure that all of our team members have like really strong data literacy and know how to read and understand data. So we're gonna do part of it. You are gonna do some math, and I'm gonna call on people to read things because that's what the teachers do. So that's what we're gonna do. Okay. So in order to understand data, you have to understand some really basic ways of like how we aggregate data. And so the one we're going to be talking about today is median. So you have on the first page, there are two questions that ask you what is the median score. And so let's just do question one first. If you could put a little like star or circle on question one, what is the median score? If you need to like really quickly check in with a partner because maybe this isn't your thing, that's okay. Or just number one, what is the median score? And I'm gonna call on someone.
Oh,
Do
I'm so there. You need to Are you able to
Okay,
answer this?
just question one. What is the median score? I'm gonna call on somebody. And if you don't want to answer, that's okay. You can say pass. Luis, what is the median score on number one?
Still figuring it out in my head right now, maybe.
That is okay.
By the way, I went to law school. So
That's
for a reason.
something my dad would have said
58? I
exactly.
say 58.
Okay, why would you say that?
I wasn't thinking about average, but I was thinking of the midpoint between 14% and 97%.
Oh, very interesting. Okay, so anybody have a like simpler way to have figured out number one? Julie, go ahead.
Median is the midpoint of the score. So how many were ahead? How many were higher? How many were lower?
So median is like if you order
I was
things.
a math major.
Median is if you order things sequentially, it has to be sequential. It is the middle number. So you're right. 58% is the median for number one. Okay, now do number two. You can work with partners if you need to like do a little math. That's fine. What is the median for number two? Belen showing some work on her paper.
We'll use our phone.
You can use your phone, yeah. What is the median for number two?
It's like two base.
All right, I see. I think there are some answers coming out. Joe, what's the median for number two?
I'm scared.
Okay, so again, median in its most simplistic terms is ordering things sequentially, and it is the middle number. What did you have to do on number two that was different than number one? Just call it out.
Take the
Say it loud.
Has average the middle number.
Why do you have to do that on this one and not the first one?
Even versus odd number of scores.
Correct. So when there's even number of scores, you average those middle two. Okay. So that
English teacher, Louise.
So that is the math that you need to understand for what we're going to do today. So now we're going to talk about one of our verified assessments that called iReady that we use at the beginning, mid, and end of year to sort of measure the progress our students are making. EJ, if you could read the first sentence underneath that starts iReady.
iReady is a verified assessment that we use to measure students' proficiency and growth in math and ELA. We assess students three times each year, beginning, middle, and end.
So can you do the next one?
iReady displays many metrics. The first metric that our teachers and leaders see when they log in is the median progress students made toward their growth goals.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to be really clear. This is not what these pictures down here is not something that Bertha or her team has built on our data systems. This is like the iReady thing. So when teachers log in to like assign tests or to look at data, this is what they see. And so it's like very critically important that our teachers and our leaders know how to interpret that. So when it when you look at your median, it should, let me try to see it here. It shows like if you're above 100%, like the one on the left, it makes this like little green star and it's like bright blue and you know, feel excited about it. When you're less than 100%, like the one on the right, it's just, you don't get a green star. So with the person sitting next to you really quickly, just like, which one do you think our teachers would be more excited to see? Are they more excited to see like the 113% numbers? Or are they more excited to see the 69% numbers? Turn and talk, meaning I hear voices. Ready, go.
Very more excited.
I guess the question is, why would they be happy to see that?
Yeah.
I think the one that's in
the library.
The metric is that. I'm going to do a
trick question.
Make for you.
What do you think, Jen?
Yeah. Okay. If you could turn back and finish up your conversation, can you make it two? And one, thank you. Okay, Kyle, which one do you think they're more excited to see?
113.
Why?
Because there's a green star.
Yeah.
Literally, that's what I said.
There's a green star, and what do you think our teachers or leaders think about like learning? What does that mean about kids learning? It looks like it's happening, right? It looks like, you know, I mean, I was a school leader. If I saw these two numbers, I'm like, yes, this class 113%, great. This other class, I need to go do something in there because it's not working. So now what we're going to do is we're going to check to see if our inference that we made about that data is correct. This is what I'm going through with leaders. So if you flip the paper over, you will see two, it's like six student classes. So class A is up at the top, students' names A through F, Ariela San Francisco. Their median average is 113. And then the second class at the bottom, Gregory through Leonis, their median is 69%, and you can see their scores. So what I want you to do is I want you to, like, let me just orient you. The first, like, the column with the percent is how much percent they made towards their goal. So all kids you want to see meeting, like, 100% of their goal. And then the columns on the right show their, like, approximate grade level, color-coded to how far behind they are. So, like, if the student's in red, they're really far behind. So what I want you to do right now is turn and talk with the people near you. Is your inference correct about the class in with 113% median? Is that class actually doing better, or are there things that might be different? Okay, so turn to your neighbors, chat, go.
More of the kids.
A couple
So you're right. It's not so good. You get three stars, crushing it.
These kids are so no one's
they're barely being broke. Yeah.
Yes. And then you've got the other one. You know,
I don't think it's a decision for this career.
Yes.
Time limit, which is boring, so you can turn back and finish up your conversation about data, which I'm so
well, this chart has
been a teacher.
Would have been a good one if they progressed already. Hey.
If your voice is gone, please turn it off and turn your body back this way. Thank you. Okay, what are some things that you noticed? Julie, I'm going to start with you. What did you notice?
About on the bottom, more kids improved than on the top. In the top, the 113 was based on three kids who are stellar, but the other three didn't improve very much at all.
What else did you notice, Glenn? You can also pass it on.
Well, I was trying to think what was like different from what Julie said. It was very, I think we had like a similar conversation around that. I think the other thing though, I was noticing is on the right-hand side, the baseline, like in the second group, they were all in red versus the group above where not everyone was in red.
Something else I noticed about the top group, my thing is so small. So in the top group, two of the kids, Adiele and Carter, who made significant growth, were already at grade level. Like you can see on the far right, their little green circle, they were already at grade level. And so it's great that they made all that growth, but they were already there. Whereas like some of the kids who are really far behind, like Daniele, Imani, and Francisca, made practically no growth. And those were the kids that we really needed to make the growth. Any other like things that you would pull out of this data set? It's okay.
How can they make 500% growth and stay within the same grade level? Wouldn't that put them at grade 7 or grade 8 or whatever?
Can you give me a name?
Adiele.
So basically iReady gives, like, based on some like complicated formulas, iReady is like, you should grow about 10 points for your grade level, right? Like you should grow however many. If they grew 50 points, they grew 5 times more. And so then that puts them higher in terms of percentage. It doesn't necessarily correlate to grade level spans.
And different goals are set based on where your starting point is in the formula.
So like,
so we don't expect an RELE to have to make as much growth to end the year with grade level mastery. But because she made so much, the magnitude of the exponential growth, even though the
percent of the typical
growth, high, which is great, like it means in this class, the more advanced students are accelerating, but we also see the problem.
So the reason I wanted to show this data set to you all and the reason I'm doing it tomorrow with our teachers or our leaders is because a lot of people, like what we did, you see that green star and you're like, things are going great. And then you don't actually do the work of like going into our student level data to look at all of the numbers that make up that median. When we aggregate data, we really should not be looking at just one number because it masks a lot of the different like complexities of what's hiding underneath it. So as part of our like data literacy, what we're working on is making sure that this year, all of our teachers and leaders know how to analyze data and interpret it so that they can best make plans for their students. Kavika.
Yeah, that's a great question that other people might be having. So I wanted to answer, which is, well, maybe we should take this green star off. Yeah, it would be great. So I just wanted to, there's a question at the bottom there that I think we're getting to a little bit too. But I did want to explain why we both look at this number, and to KJ's point, it actually masks a lot of the more important information. So when Caitlin said that this is a verified assessment, California has a list of assessments that are verified as valid to show proficiency and to show growth. They're the short list. We picked the one that we liked best, which is iReady. And that is the metric that our authorizers are willing to use in addition to SBAC score to show growth. So when we're turning in our renewal applications shortly,
Those will include, you know, where our SBAC proficiency is, but as we all know, we have a lot of students right now who have been coming in very far behind. So they might not necessarily reach SBAC proficiency. So this is an allowable metric for us to actually turn in, as we might not have proficiency yet, but we are showing growth. Our school is a value add. Now, interestingly, and I cannot explain the reasoning behind this because I don't know it or understand it fully myself, but the metric that specifically California has said is used on iReady is the median. So their goal that they've set for all schools, it's not specific to KIPP SoCal in any way, is that your median should be higher than 100, saying at least half your kids met their goal. And as long as those 50% of your kids are above 100%, and therefore your median's at 100, we're comfortable saying that you've been showing growth.
Even if it's leaving kids behind.
Correct.
Even if kids are still multiple grade levels.
So this number, it turns out, is actually very crucial for us, because this determines whether or not we've met the bar for growth. So we need to see something like the 113 to show that we've met the bar for growth. Now, instructionally, like Caitlin, myself, our teaching and learning team, what we know is that that doesn't actually help us make our decisions about where we need to intervene, what we need to work, which kids we need to work with, how we need to help teachers, you know, make sure that the other kids are not falling behind, et cetera. So that number, to Caitlin's point, can be very misleading until you know what you're looking at, and is important for us. And to your question, EJ, why it has that green star, why it's the first bar graph that shows up when you log into this platform.
So you may use one set of data for the authorizer and another set of data.
Well, it's the same data, but they look at a different cut of it. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So we're taking a deeper dive into your example, right?
So
the 113 star is problematic because you've got three high performing kids and the other three are not doing well at all.
Correct.
Whereas the other one, I mean, I looked at the scale score. Every single one of them improved.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one.
Mm-hmm.
And that can't be said for the other kids.
Right. And need to improve more.
The other thing I noticed, and I don't know if it's relevant or not, but the kids that improved were all in the higher grades.
Mm-hmm.
And the top, you know, in the top chart, two of them were in sixth grade, and the other, they were younger.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean that our kids aren't progressing as quickly as they should in the lower grades?
So what this means to me on this top one is that, so let's say all of these are, this whole class up here is sixth grade. The little, when it says like mid six or grade three or whatever,
mm-hmm.
that is the like level of content you could assume that they're performing at. So like all of these,
these are all sixth grade.
These are like, let's say this is all the same age.
Got
but what this is telling me then is like the students who are closer to mastering grade level content, like Arielle, Brandon, and Carter,
mm-hmm.
they're being successful. Like whatever the teacher is doing in her sixth grade class is working for kids who are near that standard.
Got it.
But like,
it's not they're in different grades.
No, they're all the same grade. Correct.
Okay, didn't understand that.
I didn't either.
Is there a mean that gets shared as part of this too with the teachers? Because like the way the data is calculated seems kind of skewed to the upper as opposed to the lower, the way this works.
There are a couple of different ways that iReady calculates data, and then there are other ways that Bertha will calculate it and I will calculate it to try to give our teachers and leaders a more comprehensive view. What we're struggling with is people are trying to do data analysis quickly, and they see a number and assume that it represents, you know, 113% of my kids are growing or something, and then aren't actually doing the work. So yes, there are like additional metrics, but it's making sure that our teachers and leaders understand that they need to actually do that work to make their instruction better.
Yeah, and if you look at your third page, your third visualization, on the app, the typical growth, you'll see an actual number, right? And so this will inform, for example, Adelante school leader that out of 293 students, only 148 reached their annual typical growth, right? And so here they can see, while that little star says 113, it doesn't mean that 100% plus of your student is reaching that goal. It actually only means that that cut point
that at that middle section of that median, they've reached 113% growth, but in actuality, you have so many students that you're leaving behind, right? Because 148 out of 293 is not 113%.
Anything else? No, I just say like, and so the great thing about us trying to improve data literacy skills right now is, you know, SFAP scores come around once a year. And the more all of our instructional team members get trained and understand this more, we can actually make constant sort of in the moment decisions about where we want to, which kids we might pull out for further intervention, where we might want to examine, hey, something's going on in this teacher's classroom. Let's put an instructional coach in there to work more deeply with them on X because the data is showing this. So these are actually data sources that we can use more frequently than waiting for like an end of year test. So that's one of the reasons why it's so important for us to like make sure everyone is understanding what they're looking at so that we can dig into why do we think that's happening and what's the solution.
So I'm struggling a little bit with the concept of data literacy as the problem because it feels like, huh?
Not the.
Okay, as a major problem for this, because I mean, it seems like this is generating, I'll just say screwy, not screwy data. I get it's important for the authorizers, but like as a teacher, it's not giving you the data that you need. So like, why are we even sharing it with the teacher as opposed to giving them a select, like pre-curated set of data that we feel is the right things that they should be looking at and saying, here's how these work and not have to like explain to them why. And all this other stuff that you're getting, you want to ignore or you can only use in these ways. And here's why it's important that you understand that, because that just seems a lot harder.
No, good question. You want to start?
Sure. So I'd say a couple things to that. First, like this is not a KIPSOPAL platform. So we don't have a lot of control over how things are presented.
Right.
There is lots of information on the iReady website that is very useful that I did not show you because data overload. What I do think is important is like teaching our teachers that this website has a lot of useful information about our students and about what they need and where they're being successful, and it's helping them understand where to find it.
So I hear what you're saying, but do they, like, they can log in whether we want them to or not, or are we,
okay. They need us to like assign the test. It's like part of their daily. But you
can't say don't do it. We're going to pull the data in a way that's meaningful and give it to you.
Yeah, but I think, Randy, I think 2 points that I would just add on is, one, this is why like the partnership between the academics team and the data team is so important, because what Bertha's team is now producing is like, hey, let us make it in an interface that makes it more usable for you. One, two, what we are trying to, like, yes, we show you pretty high level, but what you actually can dig into is I can actually go look at Randy, Michelle, and Luisa's scores in a way that says, oh, the specific skill that they are struggling with is, you know, letter sounds, you know, they vocabulary, right? We can actually start drilling down and seeing how they did within specific topics and questions. And that's when things really get useful. But until you understand the platform and what the data is telling you and not telling you, it's very hard to start using that.
And is there an API for this data so we can put it in?
That's exactly what we're using. Yeah. So we are pulling it daily and nightly, right? And so the other piece that why data literacy was important in this aspect is because before this year and before Caitlin and I really started working together is what we were hearing is our students are doing great. Why are you telling me they're not, right? And it's the lack of, did you actually log in and look at it at student level versus this overview that you see when you log in initially, and also let us build more things that you can now see by student level. How much exactly did they grow? You're actually understanding that to see growth, they must take multiple instances of this assessment versus just one, right? And so that's also where the annual growth is coming in, and the ability to explain that to them together has been really valuable in our schools being able to understand what the data they're producing versus just looking at it for face value when they're logging into these platforms.
Are there different, what do you call it?
Programs.
Dashboards that you can put together so that when a teacher logs on,
the data is more relevant than looking at this where we all pick the wrong answer. And, you know what I mean? Because you're right, you have to look way deeper. And so is there a way to slice and dice the data?
Yes, and that's what Caitlin and I are sort of helping orient, right, with Kevaka's help and the rest of the teaching and learning team is, look, this is what the authorizers are getting. This is what we give them at the end of the year. This does not, it should not be a high point for you to celebrate that you already met growth in March, because it doesn't actually mean that, right? We actually want you to look at this report, and then let's look at the student level data. And here's a dashboard where you can see that. And you can see how much your students are growing, and you can see how many students are taking probes, right? Because the other thing that iReady does is it allows teachers the ability to assign lessons so that their students do get to their annual or stretch growth, or they do move from one grade level to the next. And so then you would see those little dots that you see that Caitlin gave us in her data set go from like early fifth grade to late fifth grade or mid fifth grade, right? And that's the movement we also want to see.
That's one other question. So it sounds like that there's like multiple programs that maybe right or wrong that the authorizer may accept. So
yeah.
What was it about iReady that you liked more than some of the other options?
Sure. Let me start by saying, it's certainly not perfect. I have a lot of critiques of it, but we also needed to pick something off of that list, obviously. This one is very, it's much shorter than some of the other options in terms of the amount of assessment time we take away from instruction.
Oh.
And it is proving to be fairly correlated with SBAC. So we are able to get some predictive measures. You know, we're still pretty early in that, but so far, mostly correlated. And what Caitlin was just referencing, or I think Bertha was just referencing actually, is that there's like resources that come. So if you see, okay, these three students have a gap in this standard,
mm-hmm.
there's actually like independent learning lessons and practice that can get automatically assigned to a student for like during like a small group time. Like, so if you're pulling a small group, you can say, hey, and you five, I want you to do your lesson on X. And so because there's some background resources, which some of the assessments don't have, we went with this one.
And does KIPP national? I mean, I get every
actually,
state.
They're actually, so part of the one KIPP stuff, they're actually adopting this next year. We happen to have already adopted it. So this one is an easy, you know, easy one for us. So no, not everyone in the country uses it, but I think that that seems to be their intention to get there in the next year or so. We used to all use a different one called MAP, also a really strong correlation, but actually data was harder to read for teachers on that one, despite the challenges we're seeing in this one. And it was almost double the amount of testing time for kids. So that's why we moved away from that one.
Quick question. When a teacher logs in, are they able only to see their school, or are able to see all of KIPP SoCal?
On the iReady, well,
on the dashboard.
In the dashboard, it depends. There are regional ones. For instance, this one. This is a regional. It has no student level data attached to it, so all teachers and all school leaders can see this data. There are some that are school level, where we have student and the entire school by grade level, and that only school specific. That means when a teacher logs in, they can only see their data. Yeah, and so we made them shareable when they're regional, because one of our anti-racist standards is increasing data transparency, right? And so that is one of the things that we're working on with Kevaka to do.
So just to play devil's advocate, wouldn't a teacher want, or a school leader want to know, well, how am I doing in comparison to the other
school? You can see the aggregate against every other school, but what you can't see for student data privacy reasons is which kid is where. That's protected to the school. Right. So like if I'm the leader of KIPP Seoul, I can only see how each student at Seoul is doing. But if I want to know how, you know, KIPP LA Prep is doing, I can still see their aggregates. This is how they did in fifth grade. This is how they did in sixth grade. This is how they did in seventh. But I can't see student level for student data privacy.
Well, how is that? Even though we're one whole system, how is it that it's divided?
Well, we're all different LEAs, remember?
That's
so,
yeah.
Because of LA uniform.
Yeah, so like Seoul and Illuminar, in theory, can share that level, but...
Going back to other issues that we've had with people assuming that we can easily transfer from one school. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. It was so interesting.
Yes, it is. thank you both so much
thank
for
you.
Sharing. And then I didn't introduce many members of our data team are also here. So thank you all for all the work that y'all do behind the scenes every day on all of this. So thank you. Okay. Oh, we can go to.
Thank you all for all the great.
Yeah, really great questions and interest. Okay, so I'm gonna keep us going. So just last Friday was actually the last day of school for our students for the 23-24 school year, and Monday was the last day for our instructional team members, and that felt both really fast and very slow at the same time. But as we're in June and the school year just ended, I wanted to share just a high level review. I said reflections because they're not all highlights, but just things that happened this year. So a couple of things that I will name. One is just really strong direction setting when we talk about all in on academics. If you ask team members across the board, like what is KIPP SoCal's priority, almost all of them will be able to name all in on academics. And that's something that we are going to continue to build upon in the upcoming year. We just heard a little bit about the increase in the use of our data systems, and also something that we will continue to be building upon for this year. We all know that this year we had to make the very difficult, or we made the very difficult decision regarding the closure of Generations Baudet and Pueblo. I'll share a couple of updates on where we landed with both impacted students and team members on that. One, this is a highlight, is around we call it our Regional Connect, like umbrella. And this is just an opportunity for team members across KIPP SoCal to really have the space and opportunity to provide direct feedback to members of the senior leadership team. We really believe and value in having just transparent conversations, and created a couple of different methods for that to happen, which I'll share a brief update on that. And of course, enrollment, it is a challenge nationally. We're not immune to it, but it's something that we continue to focus on. So a couple quick updates related to these. I'm going to jump to kind of school closure updates. Thinking about our impacted families from our three schools. So at our last board meeting, we shared, you can see what our enrollment was looking like at those three schools for that. On the far right, you can see the number of students who are enrolled in, at our schools for the upcoming year. Obviously, there is a difference in numbers. So a couple of things that I would point out as to the reasons behind that, driving that. I think one for Generations is really the proximity to other KIPP schools. The closest school is probably 7 or 8 miles away, which, for families, proximity is, it's far, right? Within that. So that was a big driver in the decisions for families. For Poder, the families from Poder, the schools that they were most interested in and that are closest are Raíces and Illuminar. Those schools have pretty high demand. And so it's just harder to get a space in those schools. And then similarly for Pueblo, a similar challenge, but with different schools, Corazon Lower and Comienza Lower are the closest schools. So proximity being the key driver that also have high demand within that. So this is where our numbers stand at now. Of course, we are, and you'll see in the enrollment update, we're continuing to call off wait lists. There are spaces available in other schools, but ultimately proximity has been the biggest driver in families' decisions for that. With our team members, so a couple of things. As I mentioned, we just ended our school year. So we're in this weird time where when I say this school year, I'm like, which one are we talking about? But for the 23-24 school year, we feel proud that 92% of team members at those schools finished out the year. And with that, we would think about the commitment and the support that One that was provided to the team members throughout this like challenging transition, but also from our team members and their commitment and support and seeing out the school year and having a strong finish for the students at those schools. And then as we're moving into the upcoming year, so of the 92 who did complete the year, here you can see a breakdown of what happens in terms of, you know, with those team members. So 70 of them or 59%, they are assigned to other roles within KIPSOCA. So they're ready to go with their new school next year. There were an additional 14 that were given an offer through our placement processes and they declined. We did have 6 team members who resigned at the end of the year, so they did not go through any of the placement or transfer processes. We do have 10 team members currently on furlough, and that's specific to our teacher and special education assistant roles. And we went that route. They're on furlough till September 26th in anticipation that roles may open up during that time, as you know, decisions might change over the summer and through the early start of the school year.
What does furlough mean? Does it mean unpaid leave, basically? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, but they're still, yeah.
So they're still in the system.
They're still in the system.
Benefits.
Yeah, and eligible for benefits. And then, unfortunately, we did have 24 team members who were laid off or will be laid off. The last date varies depending on the team member and their role within that. So I'm going to share a little bit about some of the efforts that then went into these. One thing I'll name, and we have previewed this at our March board meeting, but as a reminder, it's, I don't know, I guess a good problem to have, is our retention rate increased this year compared to years past. So with a higher retention rate, there were fewer vacancies in which to place our team members. And so while, of course, we're happy to be on the right track in terms of retaining team members, that was just the impact in this year with this change. Our talent acquisition team was a really important part of the support for our team members in terms of like the candidate review, the placement process at the other schools, training receiving managers for how they could support their incoming team members to their school. And just a lot of additional support offered. The HR team made themselves available through various means to answer questions, both group, individual, in person, or virtual. And there was also transition career support that was provided, including the compilation of a resume book that has been shared with other CMOs with team members' resumes as well. I think the other piece I'll name on here, our last two bullet points with here, you know, of course, in this process, we took a human and team member centered approach, really focusing on our team members within that. And through that process, of course, had to maintain the balance of having ensuring stability for the organization as a whole. And so in managing that process, you know, doing so in a way that fit within our budget and really minimize any operational challenges throughout. Any questions on that? We're going to transition to almost to a different topic. Two more things on this quickly. I just wanted to share, we have shared this in the past, but we put in systems in place around, you know, early on in the process, and we stuck through those throughout the whole year. So having time with our school leaders, our regional working group, you know, making sure our fiscal obligations, student records, we have student records under lock and key right now that we're working on, the team is working on. Our operations teams are like in the last stage of the physical closeout of the school. And then Michelle and her team, you know, having the weekly communication to impacted team members, which I believe there's still one or two more to go.
Yes.
For that. So EJ, I think, did you have a question?
I have to leave.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Anyway. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Well, before you leave, let me interrupt here.
Let's do that.
I don't know if everybody knew, but EJ is finishing his tenure with the board. And I want to personally thank them. I remember a number of you were very kind to me when I started on the board. All of you are here. And EJ, you were one of those. And you know, the fact that you spent a little over a decade with this group of folks is very appreciative. And the work that you did in establishing a scholarship, the work that you and your son did in building computers for our kids, goes a long way other than just sitting in at board meetings. And I know you mentioned that you want to continue your connection with KIPP and board members. So from me, I want to thank you for the dedication that you've given us and more importantly for the kids.
Thank you very much, Lise. I really appreciate that. It's really kind. And yeah, so I think I mentioned it to most of you, but you know, it's really for kind of personal and professional reasons I've decided to move on from the KIPP board, and I'm really sad about the decision, but KIPP's not something that I want to kind of shortchange. And so, you know, I felt like I didn't have enough time to really give it the attention it needed. So, but just like you said, I mean, I'm, you know, I love the organization. It's been a privilege to be part of it for the past 10 years. And I hope to continue to support KIPP. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Love your, love
I know.
I don't think Jacqueline needs help.
10 years next year. And now I have something to look forward to. Yeah. There's a theme.
Thanks.
And I don't know if Roth is here, but we have a little something for you.
Roth.
We'll find her. Well, something will also be going to the mail. as well. Thank you, EJ.
Belen,
yes.
Before we move on from with this section, I don't want to.
With the school closure stuff? Mm-hmm. We're at the end of it.
Because we had talked about doing some lesson learned exercises,
yes.
And talking about. In a couple of frameworks, right? So what could we have done differently when we looked at establishing these schools to avoid some of these problems down the road and be a little bit smarter?
Yeah.
And I think we've done some of that work. Like, I think it's important to share with the board, you know, so that there's some awareness of that. It's not obviously here today, but also then either from exit interviews and talking to folks that were involved with this, you know, obviously looking at what happened in the event that we ever have to go down this road again, like what are some lessons learned in terms of how can we, there's never a good way to handle this, but how can we handle it better than what we did this time? Cause it was our first time going through it.
Yeah. Yes.
So I just want to make sure that we capture that and that there's,
we are, I have a note of that, but thank you for the reminder. And I think figuring out the timing for that. And then the other piece related to that, that I want to make sure the board is aware of is we have started a new, what we call our green lighting framework, which I think will answer many of the questions of like, what is different now as we think about potentially opening a new school and how we approach and think about that differently than we have in the past. So that will be something that that we'll share at an upcoming meeting.
Yeah, I have a partner that says you get smarter every day.
Yeah.
It only works if you're willing to take the knowledge that you have to use it for the future. And, you know, I really think it's good at that.
Yes. We're always open to feedback and try and learn from it. So, yeah. So, yes, I have a note of that. And then just we have these in our conference rooms, you know, well, the school's closing, like, We shared this at KIPSTAR about how we kind of continue to honor that the schools did exist. So we have these beautiful frames that were created that we are just finalizing the location for them. So probably next time you're here, you'll see them up in our space. Okay, I'm going to move quickly through just Regional Connect, as I mentioned. Just a great opportunity for team members to have direct access to leadership team members. What that looked like this past year was town halls at every school. It was either a combination of Kevika, Amber, Joanna, and Angela, who went to every school for a two-day session. They observed every classroom. They met with stakeholders in small groups. and both shared updates on KipsoCal and then got input directly from team members. So, and really what I have up here are some of the theme, the bigger themes that bubbled up that we are incorporating into our planning for the upcoming year. So student behavior was something that really came up, teachers asking, wanting more information on and clarity on how it is we support students. Obviously with the announcement of the closure of three schools and enrollment being a big driver, there was a increase in interest in well, where does our school stand? How are we doing? And so we're working on how we will continue to be more transparent around that. There was a lot of feedback around how we can improve professional development and really use that time. Feedback was provided on the scope and sequence. And I know Kevika and the teaching and learning team have really taken that to think about how the timing of how and what is taught is worked on. Team members really want to leverage being part of a network. And so having more time with people in similar grades or contents outside of their school. Two things that we're doing related to that. One is our Start Strong event will be on Friday, August 2nd, and it is a professional development focus, and team members will be grouped by content and grade, so they'll have the opportunity to learn and internalize information together then. And then we have two PD days where on one day, half the schools are in session and the other half are not. The ones that are not will go to the school that is and observe and have the time to be brief, and then they'll flip for them. And then one other thing that we heard, especially early on in the year, were concerns around pay for our school-based hourly team members. And so through Michelle and her team led work with focus groups and gathering a lot of input that resulted in a pay scale for this group of team members. So that has been shared out and will be implemented in the coming year, for the upcoming year. And then with enrollment, we are obviously continuing to work on enrollment. I just want to point us to where we're at. So if we look at the green bar, we are 87% toward our first day of school target within that. That's compared to around this time last year, we were at 82% toward our target. The blue bar is actually in May of last year, we met with 9 schools whose enrollment was not where it needed to be. So we actually adjusted and lowered their target. So based on that target, the schools were at 89% toward target. So right now we're at 87% toward our first day target within that. Okay. And then you can see here what this kind of the breakdown by grade level. The red is showing where we were at last year to the adjusted, so to the lower target, and then where we're at this year. So kindergarten and first grade are definitely the areas where they're kind of furthest away from that 100% mark. And then this is the same for our upper schools. Historically, fifth grade has been, a challenge in terms of filling that, just given the transition point. And it's not a natural transition point in alignment with other districts or other operators. But we can see where we're at there.
Wait, I'm sorry, Lynn, is this?
This is a progress.
Year over year, where were we last year versus this time?
The red is where we were at last year, and the blue is where we're at right now. So our dark goals.
Like towards your goals.
Yes. And then the 24 number, it is toward an adjust, we actually adjusted and we lowered the goals where we have not done that this year. But it's still.
So it's not quite. So wait, the 2025 number is not the same goal as last year. As the adjusted down one, it's the original one.
It's the original one for this year. Yes.
So
we're off track.
Well, it's just hard to tell if we're doing better or worse than last year, if that's the case. Because
yeah, I mean,
like if you go back to To I'm sorry, to the lower school one. Like most of these look, were the lower school goals adjusted down last year?
It was certain schools. There were nine. It was nine schools. So I can't, off the top of my head, remember which nine schools. So it was a okay. mix of schools.
So I mean, if I'm, it seems like we're doing probably better on every lower school right now than where we were last year.
Correct.
Or at least on average. Like
on average.
You know, because this has some adjustments down.
Is that the median or the average? Oh, just yeah.
Oh, wait, no, that's not, okay.
Yeah.
So these are adjusted down. So both. So TK is doing well. K looks like it's doing pretty well, but then the other grades are
trending. Two is doing well.
Two through four are doing, or one through four are doing worse.
No, two's doing better.
Well, but the two score was adjusted down. Oh, so it would have been lower.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. This by grade, it is looking at it this way is a little bit more challenging to tell. That's why I think this, you know, I know it's like the roll up, but if we were comparing apples to apples, we're at almost at 87%, whereas this time last year, without adjusting targets, we were at 82%.
Okay.
Toward our first day of school target. Yeah.
And some of that's because the biggest place where we need students is K. So first through fourth, while it's like important that we're hitting those targets, we're talking about a much smaller number of seats to fill overall.
How do you think we're doing in compared to different schools? I mean, basically, same population.
I don't know. Do you have any insight?
I don't.
That's a good question.
Yeah, something we'll look into. But you know, I know that they're experiencing the same challenges we are to the same extent. You know,
there's just less kids.
Yeah, there's less kids. Yeah.
I mean, it was at Inglewood that just announced closing. Like several schools, so it's we're not the only ones.
Does LA Unified put out a list of closures?
They did announce that they're trying to move forward with a bunch of layoffs that are linked to enrollment, which is obviously being like protested by the teachers union and everybody
Shocking.
Else. But so they are still in a space where their enrollment continues to decline every year. So they have not yet kind of turn the tide on enrollment, still declining every year. I don't have the exact numbers, but
I guess where I go with it is, and I don't know if these numbers are even attainable. In 2020, there were X amount of kids in LAUSD and then the charter schools. And what does it look like going into, what 2024 look like? And then it sort of gives you a better idea of the total population, how you're drawing. So if your numbers are dropping 2%, but the population is actually declining 7%, you're actually doing pretty well. I don't know if those numbers are available. But in a vacuum, in a declining, and you're reading about this nationally,
yeah.
Right? This is not just LA. Like, how are we really doing?
We can get the numbers for what happened the past school year.
Yeah.
So like we could get LAUSD's enrollment this year,
mm-hmm.
we know. What we can't tell you is how they're doing, tracking to what their goals are for next year.
And I think that's important because obviously we're always held to a different standard and the type of critique lens that is thrown on us.
And yeah, I don't even know if we need it for this coming year, but it would be interesting to see what last year looked like, and it looked like 3 years ago.
And to the point that
to the point
that Julie is saying, so if the pot is, let's say, 2,000 kids, right, district wide, what percentage does KIPP have of those kids,
exactly.
right? And then we compare the enrollment issue with
yeah. I mean, I suspect that we're doing better than most. I don't know.
Well, I think anecdotally or at a really high level, you might remember in December and January, February, when we were talking about the closures, we did show the enrollment changes in the East District and the South District. And if I remember correct, over the last 5 years, it was like in the 10 to 14% range. And we haven't, you know, we have not seen that level of decline in our enrollment. Yeah. In fact, our enrollment's gone up.
Right.
So I think big picture, we're doing better, but we're still like facing pressure on each individual school, you know, at an individual school level or a subset of our schools, we still are facing pressure.
But I think it's important to provide that information
and
make it accessible so folks are better educated. Look, we have nothing to hide.
LAUSD in 2015-2016 was at 639,000, and in 2022-23, it had dropped 15% to 538,000. And I know they declined this past year, I just don't know how much. So, pretty significant.
I know we did some of this analysis when we were looking at the three schools we were closing. But when we project forward, I mean, we know that the trend is that there's going to be decline in enrollment just from demographics and kind of what the threats are. Have we run some models or done some sensitivity analysis of like, what if average class changes across the year, so four classes, but instead of whatever 30 students, it's 25 and 12 or something like that, as opposed to like locking off a full class. But we gear it differently. It's obviously going to be more expensive.
Yeah.
But have we done any of those sensitivity analyses or looked at what that looks like or what we need to put that way?
Not quite that granular, but I would say like a middle school, if it was fully enrolled now, it's pretty sensitive. I mean, it's probably one to two kids a classroom that we could go down without facing hard decisions. You know, and once we start cutting one to two kids across every class, then we're going to have to make
decisions. Or supplement it with fundraising, right? Where they won't be self-sustaining. That could be a different decision as well. But like, I think at some level, we need to look at that and have the options because we're going to be, I mean, we're going to be confronting this as things continue, and it would be better to have our voices laid out in front of us and make strategic decisions in alignment with that ahead of time as opposed to after the fact, like we had to do this. So,
The other thing we're working on this is one of our priorities, but the other lever we can move is our attendance rates. And, you know, we've lost 4 or 5%. And so we're giving up several hundred thousand dollars per school from what we had pre-pandemic. So that if we could get back closer to what our attendance rates were, that gives us a little more margin for error as well on the absolute enrollment side.
Do parents understand that connection? Do we communicate that to them?
What was your question?
So we get paid if there's a but in a
seat.
So if parents, you know, since the pandemic, there's this kind of general view, like, my school's optional. Like, I mean, my kid can go if I need babysitting, if they need to help me with something today, it's okay if they want to be out of school or, you know, if I'm not feeling well, I don't want to take, whatever it is. There's like a million reasons why attendance is down. But a lot of it just has to do with attitudes towards school and how much less important it is. But I don't know that our parents understand, like, hey, it's one thing if you're pulling your kid out, okay, fine, then you vote it. But if you're voting to not have your kid here every day, that means your kid's not going to have art class. Like, I mean, we don't have to be quite that dramatic, but like, Yeah. It means we have less money to spend on programs that are super important to you.
Yeah, have
when
the parents
kid,
understand
here, so like, you know, it's really important that you do everything you can to have your kid in class.
I think you're right.
I mean,
interesting, Kyle, isn't it true that a lot of the drop-off is at kindergarten because parents are looking at kindergarten as optional? And I think we could all agree that kindergarten is an optional. And I think maybe as our TK grows, the kindergarten numbers will increase. Yes, no, thoughts?
Hopefully, I think the other thing is that, you know, I hear your point about the financial things. Like, we can still do more to explain the academic impact, and we have much more robust, and to Bertha's point, like, clean data now to share. We are sharing in parent-teacher conferences now, too, about the impact of what's happening on reading and basic literacy skills when you're missing kindergarten, specifically. And you know, there's a nonprofit, Attendance Matters, and they are kind of producing some new research right now that's, like, actually the impact of missing one day is, like, missing 3 days of learning. So I think there's some pieces like that that we can also re-up to.
To Kyle's point, I mean, there's a lot of money at play here, and that money is ultimately about things that are important to these parents, because we're not going to cut math or ELA. Like, if we end up having less money to spend on a school, it's going to be the stuff that that really enrich the school and choices, right? And so between the learning message, the enrichment messages, it feels like we should be doing a big push around this, and seeing what we can do to drive that out.
Yeah, that is two of the our operation priorities is attendance and enrollment improvement. And so part of what all of our schools must do is at the beginning of the year during the Family Academy is doing a presentation on the importance of attendance. So, you know, it's not just about, you know, do our school leaders, do our teachers know what their attendance is, but in making sure, like, we're engaging all of our stakeholders, even to
Do we explain those things?
Yeah, So that's something where some schools have done that, but now for the following year, to make sure we're continuing to align with our academic, you know, priority, you know, all in on academics, is, you know, making sure that all of our schools are doing this, and making sure that, you know, in some cases with like our low attendance in elementary, it's not because the kids, it's the parents, right? So it's making sure that all, you know, we're thinking about all of our stakeholders, the kids, the and the parents.
Well, I think that's great that we're doing that, but it feels like we should have a set of prepared messages that go to parents of the ones that are, you know, chronically absent or that are not coming, then drive this point home.
Yeah.
Like, both on the learning and on the, you know, talking like a kid at a school that, you know, offers the things that you love about kids' schools, right? People don't respond to carrots as much as they respond to the fear factor sometimes. And, like, I mean, they understand that they're jeopardizing some things that are really important to their kid. Like,
I don't think we have friends who don't understand the economics of school.
Right. I mean, it's super.
Yeah. It's also why it's so easy to, for when people are really going after charter schools, to talk about the money being taken away, because most don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
I mean, I think you're making good suggestions, Randy, and we can certainly alter how we're communicating and trying to find new ways. And I think there's a little bit of like a collective action problem or free rider problem, is that even if you explain this, as an individual, you think, okay, well, if my kid doesn't show up, it's going to cost school $200. That's not going to mean the art teacher, you know, but it's like we're talking about the impact of a whole host of decisions when each individual actor, you know, each actor is one person who acts independently. So I think we can communicate it. I think it's going to take a lot more than the money. I think it's more a compelling.
It's a combination of messages, and you don't know which one will resonate with people, but I think it's multiple messages that are, you know, kind of clear, and then
repeated, right? I mean, yeah. So it feels like we could do more of it.
Kyle's going to present the budget for that. One thing I want to note as he talks about it, when I was talking about enrollment, I was sharing our first day of school target. When Kyle talks about budget, it's based on our norm day target. So I just wanted to make that note, because we know, unfortunately, and historically, we know that there tends to be a drop off. So we have a target we set for first day, but then Kyle and team budget is set based on norm day. So. Kyle.
I'll go through this pretty quick, and you'll see I'm going to talk about our budget at a very high level. The reason for that is we've met twice in the last month with the finance committee, one in late May and last week, I think, where we presented the budget at a much more detailed level, showing my school, and had fairly robust discussions both meetings. And Judith, you can correct me if I'm misstating this, but I think it's safe to say there was strong consensus supporting the budget that was presented.
Yes, so it's strong consensus. I would agree on that.
I'll just walk through again at a very high level. These are some of the key assumptions underlying the budget. We've built the budget on assumed enrollment of a little over 9,700 kids, which is actually about a 500 student discount from what our norm day target is. So from what all our schools are working towards, we've ended up building our budget a fair amount more conservative on that. So we're actually already our confirmed returners and fully enrolled students exceeds our budgeted number by about 40 kids at this point. So I think we're going to be in a pretty decent spot relative to what we're budgeting. Again, and I want to say this is a pretty heavy discount from what our schools are working towards. And that if we, this budgeted number is about a 4% decline from our enrollment this school year. Again, largely attributed to the school closures. We're budgeting, assuming an attendance rate of, you see, about a little over 90%, which is an improvement of 1% of what we're experiencing this year. So we are expecting or counting on some of these efforts that Jen alluded to paying off. The state is increasing our per pupil funding rate only by 1%. So this is the most modest increase we've seen in a long time.
And then that will follow the inflation numbers.
Yeah. Well, this is actually set by some weird inflation calculation, because this theoretically is set based on inflation. But the state is even struggling to fund this. So we could see declining funding in the coming years. We're assuming $7 million in philanthropy. The development team has a target that's substantially higher than this based on the capital campaign, but we're assuming $7 million for operating purposes. Also included in here is $6.5 million in one-time revenue from the state that we already have. It's just we're planning on recognizing that this year, so that's not a risky number. We don't expect to take on any new debt. We will be refinancing a loan, but I'm not forecasting any additional debt this year. And then built into here is about $4.5 million in the finishing Ignites project. We could have another $3 or $4 million going into real estate if an acquisition that we're in the process of actually transpires. This is, again, what Belen was alluding to, enrollment shown a slightly different way than what Jen just ran us through. The blue columns is the norm day targets. So this is what our schools are working towards to have their enrollment come October, a little bit lower than the first day of school numbers, and a little higher, actually, than what our budget's built on. The pink is the wait list. So basically, any combination of colors except the pink that exceeds the blue shows that we're approaching a decent position. So you'll see this set of elementary schools is in a pretty good spot thus right now because they either have, you know, enrolled kids or a wait list that should get them there. This next set of elementary schools, we start seeing the challenges once you get past Empower and DaVita, and you'll see Ignite and Promesa and Endeavor are the ones that are furthest off right now of where we're hoping to be. Although Ignite's made good progress.
And the light green means that's what we need to enroll?
The blue is what our
target is. That I understand.
And the other, so the green is, the dark green is returning kids.
Right.
The light green is fully, like, enrolled. We have all the paperwork. They're new kids. The yellow is, they're in the, somewhere in the process of enrolling. We have some of their paperwork, but not all of it. And then pink is waitlist. But often, like, so the waitlist for Endeavor, for example, it doesn't match. It's the wait list is in grade levels that are fully enrolled.
Got it.
So that's like, it's a little deceiving.
So it's really not.
The Endeavor wait list is going to solve that problem.
Right. But like KPP, Promesa.
PP, Promesa.
Promesa, as I thought.
Similar. So, that
so it, even with the wait list, we're behind the target.
Yeah. That's right.
So how much. At schools like this in the past that are behind at this point in the year, how much closing of the gap do we usually see between now and
November? Jen, you can chime in here if I'm misspeaking, but pretty modest. It's usually they might see like a jump between now and their first day of school, but usually then we see a trail off from the first day of school to norm day, which I would say generally actually brings us pretty close to where we are.
Yeah, where we are now.
The time, you know, on average. It's, and that's something that Jen is, you know, constantly reminding our schools of, because they'll often tell us, like, but I always build up my enrollment in the summer, like, don't worry. But then we'll show them, well, but this is where you are now, last year. This is where we were first day, but this is where you were come October, and it's kind of treading water. So the progress in the summer is important, but it's not enough to overcome being behind usually at this point in the year. And that's partly why we've discounted our budget by about 500 students from what these targets are. That's why. Like, we're not assuming that Promesa closes this gap that you're seeing right there in terms of what our budget is going to be built on.
Quick question. The norm D target numbers, is that capacity that each
student? No. So, well, a lot of schools, it is. So, like, Compton, right, like this whole set of schools that's doing well, their norm day target is basically what we would expect a fully enrolled school to be. So it is pretty synonymous with capacity. But like Ignite at 500, when they're fully enrolled, they would be about 584 students. Now Ignite, they've been constrained to about 400-ish students the last many, many years because of their facilities. Right after the start of the year, they're moving into their new facility that can serve the 580 kids. So over time, we're expecting them to get there, but not this year. But Promesa, you know, that's about 525, probably their target. They should be at 580. There's no reason facility-wise why they can't be there. But we just knew, like, heading into this season, based on what they've done the last couple of years, it was just totally unrealistic to set their target at 580 kids. It was just wasn't going to do them any favors, wasn't going to do us any favors.
When you talk about adjusting targets, that's what you're referring to.
Well, last year, we, in the middle of the enrollment cycle,
we lowered the school's targets because we were seeing some schools so far off track. And I think this year, kind of learning from how that let, I think that resulted in people feeling like they were achieving what they were supposed to achieve, and a misunderstanding that, so we didn't do that this year. Even if they were still off track, we didn't lower their targets. We kept the targets the same, but for budgeting, we've adjusted. Does that make sense? So like what the schools are aiming for is static. Because that was part of like when in the December meetings, you heard people saying, but I met my target. That it was because so much got confused of like your target was lowered, but that was just, you see what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Good. Thank you.
And then this is upper schools again. This set of schools doing pretty well. And it's really Philosopher, Adelante, and Compton Upper that are quite a bit behind where their targets are. It really is worth noting Scholar is remarkable. So Scholar had about 300 kids this school year. We set their target around 400, thinking like, man, if they could recover 100 kids, that would be pretty incredible and start getting them on the path. And I think they're hovering around like 440 right now, 450. And so if, you know, we got to make sure those kids show up on day one, but it's been really encouraging to see the response in the, you know, with what Tommy's done this year, what Jen and Kayla have done. With marketing and then just being in that new neighborhood with the new facility. So that's encouraging for us.
I remember seeing the other ones that are not so good.
And again, it's worth noting just to, you know, make sure it's fully out there, the challenges we have. Adelante, for example, you see they're far a bit off the target, but even their target is about 100 kids below what a fully enrolled middle school ought to be, right? So that target is probably 380-ish. A fully enrolled middle school ought to be about 485 kids. Compton is only 2 grade levels, so it's not the same for them.
I want to, like, do we know why it's so far below? We do. What?
You want to elaborate? I can.
You can start. I can film.
I mean, there's a whole host of reasons. This has been the case for several years now, ranging from there's no feeder school, so it's our one school that doesn't have an elementary feeding yet. So we've struggled in fifth grade. We're basically getting one classroom of kids in fifth grade. We haven't been successful in pulling kids from whatever school they're in, you know, prior to that natural transition point. We've just done Jen and Andrew in San Diego have been involved in a demographic kind of demand study. And it's showing that while we're actually in like the right spot, like the perfect spot in terms of just the surrounding demographics relative to other parts of San Diego, the number of kids, like the number of school age kids, is probably a third to half what our typical like catchment area is in LA. So just way fewer kids. What we don't know yet is how that relates to how many school seats there are relative to that, because that will matter. But I think there's just less kids. I don't know, but some schools of our competing schools offer high schools. So that seems to be something we're struggling with. If, you know, families can stay in the one school system the whole way through. So it seems to be a host of issues that we have not. Yeah.
I'm just replaying some conversations from the past, but
I know.
Yeah. This is just showing this is on a per pupil basis, our revenue. Really what's the takeaway here is you can see back in fiscal year 22, ESSER was a big chunk of our funding, or, you know, not a majority, but we had a meaningful amount. That's fading out. And just the one-time revenue overall is becoming a much smaller part of our budget, and that will continue to get smaller and smaller. So anyhow, here is the budget at high level. Net income, about $2 million. You'll see overall a decline in revenue. The general purpose revenue, largely driven by the 4% decline in enrollment, which is not offset entirely by the additional COLA to our LCFF rates or the slight increase in our attendance assumptions. The big drop in federal revenue is largely attributed to ESSER, not, you know, the end of that. And the increase in other state is, so the fact we're losing some other state by closing the schools, that's offset by about $5 million in this community schools grant we got and by the one-time revenue we're recognizing. On the expense side, the bulk of the increase in salaries is related to the large increase we did for our teacher salary scale. Classified salaries is basically flat.
What? Salaries are flat?
Classified. That's like all the non-teaching staff. That's like this office, the aides at schools, after-school instructors. I think the other big thing to note, the reason you see a large decrease in operating services, that's assuming we don't have as many use of subs, primarily driven by substitute teachers next year. The other increase in salaries and benefits, that's assuming full employment. In reality, what we're seeing is we won't be fully employed. You know, we'll have a lot of vacancies. So that number of salaries will actually be lower, and then operating services will probably revert closer to what we saw this year because we'll have to fill that with subs. Well,
aren't salaries also higher because of the need of more special needs teachers?
To some extent, that yes, but not. I mean, it's such a small portion of the overall salaries that's not driving too much. And then not really the balance sheet is fairly constant, expected to be fairly constant. A small decrease in cash as we spend our one-time revenue. And this is our key indicators we measure ourselves against. You'll see that generally kind of in line or slightly better than our targets.
Is our top line better because of the schools that we closed?
It's better than it would have been.
Right.
Yes.
Well, better than 23-24 because they were in our 23-24 numbers.
Yes, that is true. And I think that's all I got. Can't take a vote.
Yeah. You cannot take a vote, but are there any additional questions regarding the budget?
Thank you. Okay.
Can you click like? So we just quickly, we already shared about EJ. You want to this update?
So Nancy from San Diego is also coming off the KIPSOCAL Board of Directors. She finished her first term down there, and she's been a strong advocate for us in San Diego. Here you see her emceeing an event, a ribbon cutting, and she's helping us to make sure that we meet the local requirements and having a representative down there. But unfortunately, she's cycling off.
We need a board member in San Diego, correct?
We do. Yeah. So we're working on that right now. Yes. in the works.
Bunch of great prospects.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that is true. Yes. But yes, we wanted to share that update around Nancy as well.
So that's it. It is, we don't have any other items to discuss. Obviously, we can't vote on. So it's now 2:45 and we are adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you.